Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Project for Deeper Understanding. Tonight's topic is high rent, low wages. How can it work? I'm Scott Loomis, and I'm the Executive Director of Mountainlands Community Housing, and I will be the moderator tonight. Tonight, we have a distinguished panel, and we will have an opportunity to introduce them in just a second. But the format will be the moderator will ask the questions a question, and various panel members can answer it. They'll be limited to 3 minutes, and then after about an hour or so, the audience will be able to ask questions, and they will also be limited to 3 minutes. So we're ready to go, so let's start over here and start introducing yourselves and just briefly and tell them who you are and what you do.
Okay, my name is Yvonne Timar, and I work for Flanagan's on Main. I'm the GM for an Irish pub in Main Street.
I'm Peter Phillips. I'm a professor of economics at the University of Utah. I study the construction industry in the winter, and in the summertime, I'm a backcountry ranger in the Grand Tetons.
Hi, I'm Tony Tyler with Columbus Pacific Development, a real estate developer here in Summit County. Some of our recent projects include the former Kimball Arts Center on Main Street, the Apex Residences, and the new Pendry Hotel. What we're most proud of, and part of the reason I'm here tonight, is that we're developing the workforce housing project at the Canyons Village.
My name is Jeff Worthington. I'm president of the Utah AFL-CIO, which is I represent all labor union in the state of Utah. Currently, I have about 25,000 members, and this topic is something that is very interesting to me, and I look forward to the conversation tonight.
My name is Deanna Rhodes, and I'm really honored to be on this panel tonight because I just ran for city council on the fact that I believe that Park City only works when it works for everyone, and I really wanted to shed light on the fact how hard it is for working people in this community. And my experience is that I've worked on Main Street, I've worked seasonally at the Mountain, and I have also worked at Starbucks as a barista, and so I think, and then of course in the nonprofit community, and I just think that really shows a broad perspective of how challenging it can be here.
Good evening. I'm Steve. I'm a restaurant consultant. I own a company called Golden Spike Resources Group, and I consult both locally and around the country in consumer strategy, business strategy, and marketing.
So I've been asked to present some numbers so we all kind of have a perspective of how difficult the situation is here for employment and for living and making Park City community what it is. And for those people on the radio, I will take a few extra minutes doing this because you can't see the numbers, and I will try to identify the key numbers as we move forward. But the intent is to go through this fairly rapidly so we can get the comments. So if we can have the first slide, please. So when we talk about housing particularly, we talk about area median income, and that is determined by HUD. There's a number of median incomes that are determined, and basically that means half the people make, households make above that and half below that amount. And in Summit County, we're one of the highest in the country and by far the highest in the state. For a family of four, 100% median income is $109,800. Okay, next. Next slide, please. Okay, so the average wage here in Summit County, this is a 2018 statistic, and this table is showing us the number of jobs for different categories, and starts with food preparation, which is over 4,000, office administration, 3,600, and it goes down to business and financial, which is about 1,800 jobs. But the range of these medium hourly earnings are $1,246 for food preparation, up to about $30 an hour for managers. And when you look at the area median income I just mentioned, that's about $55 an hour to make $110,000 a year. So these wages, you can see, are substantially below that amount. Next slide, please. Okay, the earnings per job, and this is critical. So here, the national average is about $66,000. The Utah average is about $64,000. But here in Summit County, we're about $56,000. So our average job is well below the average in the state and in the United States. Next slide. The cost of living, however, is 139% of the national average. Utah itself is just a little over 100%. So next slide. And this will show us that when you adjust for the cost of living allowance, that our average wage is about $10,000 less than $38,000. It's actually less than that $56,000 we showed you before. Next slide. Okay, so the real estate market here in Park City, everybody's well aware, has been on the increase the last 5 or 6 years and increasing substantially. So in the Snyderville Basin, the average sales price for a single-family resident is over $1,600,000. For the median price is just over $1,200,000. For a condominium, its average price is $722,000. And average is almost $600,000. And in Park City, of course, those prices are even higher, with the average single-family resident being $2,800,000 and median over $2 million as well. Condominiums over $1 million for the average and $785,000 for the median. Next slide. So if the other problem we have here, one big issue is not so much that we've had a lot of development lately, but we've had an increase in traffic. And one of those reasons is we actually import 16,122 jobs into the county every single day. Next slide. The exported labor, which is traffic going the other way out of the county, is 11,500 people have jobs outside of our community. And those, as we showed in the earlier slide, are the higher paying jobs in Salt Lake. Next slide. So the people that live and work in Summit County is only about 10,500. So that's about 35% or less of our workforce that actually lives in the county and works in the county. Okay, next. So the sales last year in 2018 of real estate, and this slide I'm showing now breaks down the various income categories, but the main point is for 120% median income below, less than 15% of the sales were for incomes that would qualify at that level. 85.7% of the sales would be to families earning over 120% of the median income. Next. This shows that a $500,000 house, if you can find one, whether it's a condo or a house, you need an income of about $110,000 to qualify for it, which is basically 100% of the area median income. $1 million, which is the numbers we've been talking about, you need an income of about $220,000, which is 200% of the median income. And then the bottom part of the slide shows what somebody making 30, 40, or 50, or 60% of the median income and those income ranges, which at 30% is about $31,000, 60% is $65,000. Rents, the, at 30% you can afford $780 a month, and at 60% of the median income, $65,000, about $1,647. And the sales prices range from $127,000 for the 30% median income to $268,000 for 60%. So you can see our workforce and the wages are pretty well priced out of the market, both the rental market and the for sale market. Next slide. So this shows basically the market rents, which for a studio is in the range of $1,000 to $1,300 a month, one bedroom, $1,400 to $1,600, two bedroom, $1,800 to $2,000 per month, three bedroom, $2,300 and up. Next slide. So in Summit County, we actually have 689 income restricted units, apartments that are for rent, and those are all income qualified. There's actually 134 apartments where people have what they call rental assistance, which means they pay 30% of their income for rent and utilities, and the rest of it is subsidized. We also have about 250 deed-restricted for-sale units that are available, too. So that's the limitations of what exists in Summit County, and that's where a good portion of our workforce presently lives. Next slide. So the annual growth rate 5 years or three or four years ago was projected on a five-year curve of about 1,000 jobs per year. This slide is showing that the last couple of years that has dropped considerably, where it went from 560 to 460 to 260 last year, and this year it's projected to be a little over 1,000. Next slide, please. So the employment growth is going to continue, and you can see on this curve that it stopped for a couple of years there, but it's going to be this year up to about 1,000 more jobs, which will give us a workforce of about 30,000 people. Next slide. So the annual five-year employment projection is going to be slightly less, but it's roughly, the median is about 737, so we're going to gain about 750 jobs per year projected. Next slide. And the residential building permits, this shows that, and actually before this period of time, which is 2010 to 2019, before the recession, they were well over 1,000 residential building permits per year, and it's averaged about 200 building permits each year for Summit County. Next slide. So the annual building permits, again, were down below 200 last year, and 167 projected so far this year. So you can see the equation of residential building permits versus jobs that have been created lately are out of disproportion at this point. Okay, next slide. Keeps jumping it. We're almost done there. Okay, I think that's it. So that's the that's kind of the picture. It's not very pretty. So let's get started with our panel for the first question. So high rent, low wages. Tell us how this affects your life and your business. And we're going to start with Deanna, and then we'll go to the two restaurant people, and then after that, go ahead.
So when I moved here, I was 33 years old, and I have a college degree. I had no student debt. I actually had no other debt. I have no major medical illness, and then English is my first language. When I came here, I started working a seasonal job, $11 an hour, and I was paying for a room $625 in rent. And that is exactly what I knew I was coming into, and I was perfectly fine with that. But when I decided that I was going to stay and make Park City my home and started looking for full-time housing and full-time employment, my wages and my rent went up dramatically. My wages stayed about the same. So a lot of the jobs that I referenced earlier, working on Main Street, even working in the nonprofit, I was really making a range of $11 to $15 or $17 an hour. And so I was working a lot of different jobs. And the only reason that I could do that to cover the rent was because I don't have any children. I'm a single person, I'm living alone, and I'm not caretaking for anyone else. And so I was able to do all the jobs and a lot of different contracts to be able to make it all work. And even at that, it was quite a stretch. And so I can't hardly imagine what it would be like for someone who didn't have all of that privilege that I was able to have, so.
Great, okay, next would be Stephen.
Well, I don't. First of all, the restaurant industry requires, if you're going to be a person in the restaurant industry, see, there's stopping off point, starting point, or a career. And for people that are going to make it a career, they have to seek out the restaurant companies that provide benefits, that provide upward mobility, etc. The difficulty for restaurants is, in a lot of ways, the same as the difficulty for people with low wages. Rents are extremely high in Park City and Summit County. There's a formula that when I started in the business 40 some years ago, I can't remember if I'm old, but if I am, I've been in the business a while. And the formula was about 8% maximum for rent versus sales. That's impossible in Park City. I'm helping, sort of as a charity, a small restaurant that pays 12% rent. He hasn't made any money in a year and a half of this particular branch. So it's tough on both sides.
Okay, thank you. And next, restaurant manager, Yvonne.
Yeah, I'm gonna focus in my employees. I see this quite a bit. The majority of our employees are, you know, from other countries. They're here. They're the hardest working people I've ever seen, and they're amazing. They work so hard. They have, some of them have like three jobs, and you know, to make ends meet, and not only that, to pay rent. And I see two-bedroom apartment with two different families on them, just because they can't afford the rent by themselves. You know, I wish I can do more. What we do is, you know, a restaurant is seasonal. You know, Park City is very seasonal, and we can only do so much. You know, we can only have, you know, a restaurant open so many days of the year. We try to be open all the time, but there are times that we have to close because we can't even afford to, you know, to be able to be open and the whole time. But I wish it can be something that we can do.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Phillips, comment?
Well, I live down in Salt Lake, and down in Salt Lake, the issues are different, but Park City is not alone. Jackson, Wyoming is exactly the same story. The same kind of commutes that you see coming up Parley's, go over Teton Pass every day. Those who do not commute from Bondurant or from Driggs or Victor, they crowd in, often illegally, into single family homes and crowd three or four families in there. And you can see this same phenomenon on a bigger scale when you look at the Bay Area and you look at Silicon Valley, the peninsula. They import from the Central Valley every day the same sort of service workers that Park City is importing. One of the distinctive things about Park City, in contrast to either Jackson or Silicon Valley, is you not only import your poor people, you export your rich people. And so the rich folks go down the hill and the poor folks come up the hill. The answer as to how you can square this circle of low wages and high rents is you either have to lower the rents or raise the wages or some combination of the two. And with 3 minutes, I won't even dare to get into that topic, but that it should be one of the focuses of conversations about the solutions.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to have some of those solutions coming up here soon. Tony, maybe you can address how this, you're in the development business. So how does this impact the construction trades, the construction industry?
It has a pretty significant impact on our industry, both from an economic perspective, but also from a lifestyle perspective. Park City in particular has a very high barrier to entry, and we're constantly looking for places where we can provide practical opportunity for folks, not just those that work for us directly or indirectly through the construction industry or the development of the projects that we do, but also from a planning perspective. So we've been heavily involved with the CVMA and the Canyons Village to try to produce opportunities for people that otherwise would not have the ability to live and work in a place like Park City. at a rate that is affordable for the wages that are being paid for those jobs. We constantly see a disconnect between the two, and we're actively working for ways to practically subsidize the difference in the economic component of the construction industry to bring both the project prices down to the point where it is viable for them to be built and developed for the workforce locally in Park City, but also to lower that barrier of entry for people that want to come and live and work in Park City.
Okay, thank you. And Jeff Worthington, AFL-CIO Utah Chapter President, your comments, please.
Well, I'm kind of the square peg here. I live down in Salt Lake City, but I represent members across the whole state. Park City's always been one of my favorite towns ever since I was a teenager back in high school, and I would spend all of my time up in this town. Once I got to that age when I could afford to start buying things, I realized, boy, I could have afforded it when I was in high school, coming up here every weekend having a good time. But the prices skyrocketed rather fast. So I ended up working my career down in Salt Lake City. I purchased down there. I spent 39 years working on the railroad as a locomotive engineer, which offered me a great income, a great opportunity to raise my family and achieve the things I wanted to in life. Since retiring from the railroad after 39 years there, I became the president of the AFL-CIO because I was always involved in my unions. And since I've been the president of the AFL-CIO for the past 2 years, my motto or my theme has been save the middle class America. We got to save the middle class America because that's where we're at. Unfortunately, what we're seeing up here in Park City is middle class America may not even be able to afford the prices that are going on up here. But what we offer through the unions is we negotiate living wages, we negotiate health care and welfare benefits, we negotiate retirement benefits. Now, if those things are covered in your employment, that's a couple of things you don't have to worry about coming out of your pocket if you don't have that. And if you have to pay for your health care separately, then that's an expense that's going to keep you from being able to afford. But we deal with the issues of affordable housing and multi-generational people living under one roof. That's a real issue even down in Salt Lake.
Okay, thank you. So our community provides free bus service, health care for the uninsured, daycare for the workforce, a food bank, subsidized housing, and other resources for our year-round employees. Some employees actually provide housing allowances, transportation reimbursements, and other benefits. But let's focus first on our year-round workforce, who really are the heart of our, and soul of our, what makes our community special. Two-part question. So, in your opinions, who has the responsibility to provide for the needs of the year-round workforce, the community, or the employers? And what other ways are available to attract employees to join the permanent workforce that you've experienced or are promoting? Start with, who's got their hand up? okay, let's go the other way. Let's start here with Yvonne.
I think it's both. I think if there should be a balance, yeah, I think the employer definitely needs to take care of the wages and how to make benefits and for the employees. But and then the community or this, you know, the city, I think it will be good to, here in Park City in particular, I think it will be good to have other options as for rent and affordable things for the middle class.
Okay. And Dr. Phillips?
Employers by themselves can't do anything because they're under the pressure of competition that forces them to limit the remuneration that they can offer. There's only so much they can do in terms of raising their prices to their customers. And so there may be a little wiggle room that employers have in terms of shaving their profits or just, you know, managing things a little smarter. But for the most part, employers on their own are caught. So it is the community, or alternatively, the unions that can address this. And the reason communities or unions can address this problem is they can do something across the board that employers can only do inside their company. So the community could, either through taxation and subsidies or other kinds of rules, such as a minimum wage, could set standards that would raise the income of those you're talking about when you say low wages and high rents. When you ask the question, low wages and high rents, how can you make that work? You have to bring those rents and those wages closer together. And that can only be done through union organizing or community organizing. It's either through regulation or through collective bargaining that you can set standards that'll bring rents and wages closer together.
Okay, thank you. Tony?
We've seen some models that I think facilitate a little bit more of the conversation around the competitive advantage to providing housing, particularly for employees in markets like ours in the Canyons Village, where you're really competing for a workforce in addition to competing for a customer. So it is difficult to not only attract the labor to operate projects like we build, but it's also equally as difficult to maintain them over time. And so there are options, I think, that employers can use to, for example, master lease numbers of apartment units or homes, which I know exists in Park City now, to offer as part of the package to come to the city and to come to an individual project to work, because I think that it provides a competitive advantage over, you know, neighboring projects that may not do and offer the same things from a living perspective that you can offer in that respect. At the same time, I think it's very challenging for employers to provide affordable housing in and of itself, and so there does need to be a community component that effectively subsidizes in one way, shape, or form either the construction and development of new projects or the long-term maintenance and operation of a project that suits that need.
Thank you. Jeff?
One of the first things that comes across my mind, we just had our general election down in Salt Lake City, and through the mayor race that was going on there, affordable housing was a big issue. I don't know the zoning up here in Park City well enough to really expound on that, but is there areas of zoning where affordable housing can be built? I know that we were looking at the slides, and $1 million for a home, that's out of reach for most people. And so what is the opportunity of subdividing something on a more affordable level? And I realize that's a tough ask because the real estate up here is worth so much. You know, do you really want to put affordable housing on something that you could put something that you could get a lot more money out of? I think another issue too is in a resort town like Park City, you have a lot of people in the hospitality industry working on tips and that. I think those type of wages need to be addressed. I know in Utah, the wage for a tipped employee is $2.13 an hour plus tips to bring them up to $7.25 an hour. That's just unheard of. That's so archaic that needs to be changed. And there again, as the good doc said, that we do negotiate through our unions. And one myth I want to resolve right now is unions are not out to break companies. My philosophy on that is a healthy employer means healthy employees. So you never want to rock that boat and disrupt that balance. But with larger corporations, which I deal with day in and day out, there's a real wide gap between the haves and the have-nots, and that's another issue that we could address at another time.
Good. Thank you. Deanna.
Well, first, I just want to repeat that you mentioned long-term residents and for long-term housing, and I think that's a really important distinction to make, because often you start talking about affordable housing and whose responsibility is, and a lot of times people in their mind are thinking seasonal workers, and I think that answer might be different than what I have for the long-term housing. And I think it's absolutely the community's responsibility, because when you look at our community, and it's very unique being in a resort hospitality community, we are all benefiting from these employees and from these workers, and I think it's our responsibility to make it work, because we also are suffering the consequences with everyone driving in or driving out because to get to their jobs. So I think it's the community's responsibility.
Okay. Okay. And Stephen.
Well, as Dr. Phillips said, there's a squeeze between the employer and the market force. You've got 160 restaurants or thereabouts in Park City. There are probably 10% of those restaurants that really make big money, that really are successful. The rest of them are in the range that the National Restaurant Association says somewhere between 3% and 5% of sales as profits, which is a lousy business to be in. So it's incumbent on people with that want to be in the restaurant industry to decide if it's going to be a career. And like you, you're a general manager and working, no doubt, toward a piece of the action, et cetera. And that has to happen. How a restaurant can afford to pay employees more depends. I personally think the minimum wage is extremely low in Utah and ought to be a two-pronged minimum wage, where as a young person you have a lower first job minimum wage, and for a career person you need a living wage, and it's not necessarily going to happen anytime soon, I don't think, in this environment. To speak to the tip credit was originally designed to allow equality between the person being tipped and the worker in the back of the house making the food. $2.13 plus their tips is not a living wage.
Okay, thank you. So Stein Erickson Lodge recently ran a full page ad several times in the Salt Lake Tribune and presumably other places, offering over 100 jobs, as many words as you can possibly put on a full page. And they agreed to pay half of the travel expenses for the seasonal workers who lasted half the season, and 100% of their reimbursement if they stayed all season, they'd send them home. They had signing bonuses and other incentives. Hundreds of jobs have gone unfilled in the past few years. Management has had temporarily been required to man many of the line positions, and many of the employees worked overtime and extra shifts. My conversation recently with many employers, this year looks even worse. So with an estimated 6,000 seasonal employees needed each winter, and about 1,200 of those plus are J-1 visa employees who are here even for a shorter season, what can be done to recruit a fully staffed workforce as well as house them? Who wants to start? Okay, Tony.
I'll start. And I think I'll do it in response to a comment, Jeff, that you had a little earlier, which was, you know, what does the county zoning and planning process look like for, you know, for housing that might be available? I think as a community, we should be as focused on solutions that can provide what I'm going to consider a low cost alternative to a subsidy that could be provided for the workforce to live and work in our community. An example of that is the workforce housing project that we've partnered with the CVMA to build. That development as a whole is effectively granted the land into the partnership for free. It was a partnership with Summit County to produce an assessment area to purchase the land that is applied to a large number of parcels that contribute to it over an extended period of time. And so as part of that contribution into the development, it immediately affects the overall economic impact of the project, allowing it to be built for a significantly lower price at a much lower entry point, which in turn allows the end resident or the end user, whether it's seasonal or year-round employees, to pay a much lower rate to live in the community. And so I think it's more of those type of opportunities that we should be focused on working with the Summit County Council and the Planning Department, also with the City of Park City, to place as much focus on planning specifically to come up with solutions as, for example, the amount of time and energy and money that's been focused on open space, which we all enjoy as well. So I think that you can create an opportunity for the workforce to live in the community like Park City, but you have to change the way that you think about what that product looks like and how it's developed over time. So everyone in Park City is very opposed to very tall, very dense projects with no parking, but that is exactly how you get the workforce to live in the area where they're actually working. And so you have to be able to modify, you know, your thought process in terms of how the buildings are designed and how the projects are planned to accommodate a product that is economically viable. If it's not economically viable and there exists no other subsidy from either the community or the employer, there's really no way that you can accommodate workforce housing of any kind.
Okay. And that project is 1,150 beds roughly, I think.
It is, and we've actually been working with the CVMA. It's 1,150 beds right now, and we are only using about 65% of the land. So there's an opportunity for us to build another, could be 500 to 600 beds in that project without doing anything else from a land perspective, assuming the demand exists, which
Great.
We think it
Thank
does.
Thank you. Dr. Phillips.
Focus, it's really a simple issue and at the same time complex. The simple part of the issue is either housing costs have to come down or wages have to get punched up or some combination of the two. That's the long game, is to keep an eye on that. Now, how can housing costs get brought down? One way is changing the rules on how you zone land, and that's essentially what Tony was talking about. Another way is you could have publicly provided housing, and that is essentially subsidizing the housing costs of lower wage people through the public purse. A third way you can do it is through rent controls. And a fourth way you can do it is you can put requirements on developers that if they want to build this, they've got to build that. Those are the basic flavors. Each has its upside and downside. That's how you bring the cost of housing down. How do you punch wages up? Basically, there are three routes. One route is through skill enhancement. So essentially, you're changing what people deliver. A second route is through union organizing to enhance the bargaining power of workers, not touching their skills. And those two things aren't mutually exclusive. Union organizing and skill enhancement can go together. They're not just alternatives. The third is to provide wage subsidies through some kind of income supplement so that you're not working on the cost of housing, but you're working on the amount of money that's in people's pockets. None of those solutions come clean. So each has its own problem, and it's worth its own discussion.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else want to weigh in on that question? Deanna?
So one of the things that I was talking about a lot for the last 6 months or so is the problem that we have is empty homes. And the Christian Center has done a really great job of working with J1s and trying to match some people into homes so that there's some housing for those workers that are coming into town. But there are still tons and tons of houses that are sitting empty more than 90% of the year where the family only comes for Christmas and possibly spring break. And so I think that we need to start getting really creative and start looking outside the box and trying to figure out how we can encourage people to rent out rooms or levels of their house. I know it sounds really wild and out there, but it's really important to look at all the solutions we can, because a lot of times when we start talking about some of the issues that you guys brought up, you start saying, well, the state legislature won't let us do those things. And I think it's really important that we are looking at these creative ideas. And I think that's one that I would like to explore is, you know, I live in Prospector, and there are a lot of Airbnbs and Prospector, and I don't think that's where they belong. I think that that was intended to be workforce housing for people that live here year-round and are contributing to the community. And so how do we start to take back control of our community? Another idea that was presented actually by Breckenridge, and I hope that our city council starts to look at this very seriously, is you know, kind of a deed buyback program. So places like in Prospector, the 1- and 2-bedroom apartments that are being Airbnb'd nightly for nightly rental, you know, at point of transfer, can we encourage them to put a deed restriction on it at that point? So now it can be year-round housing as opposed to sitting empty every weekend except for Sundance, President's Weekend, and Christmas. I don't think that's the right thing to do for the community.
I have a comment. So for the J1s, they come, they give all these visas to these young people to come and work for these big hotels. Wouldn't the hotels have some kind of arrangement or do something about, you know, paying certain amount of money for a place for them to live? I've hired so many J1s, and you know, they do their second jobs, and they're all living in one house, 20 people in there, and it's just, it's outrageous to me. And they're 22-year-olds, and they work really, really hard, you know, at those hotels, and then they just come and they work, and they just work in the whole time. So I don't know, I just wonder, why are those hotels not providing, perhaps, just to facilitate more, I will say.
I don't have anything to offer as a solution, but I can't remember who said it, so I can't attribute it to them. But they were talking and just making a point of cruise ships. They staff all the, they house all the people on the cruise ships, and I don't know where they live, but they're able to do it. And there's thousands of employees on those large cruise ships, so there must be a way.
Yeah, maybe I'll answer that. There's almost no availability of product for a hotel operator or a development owner to be able to even lease for their employees. So I think the key step is providing the product to start with, and then making it available for, you know, for the employers to be able to provide that amenity. I mean, there are certain individual projects that have a scale that are large enough for that to happen. Stein Erickson Lodge actually master leased an apartment product in Old Town, and they have 40 employees living there. But that's the unicorn, right? So it doesn't otherwise exist in Park City, and that's what I think that at least what we're trying to do in the canyons is try to alleviate some of that burden and create that opportunity for the employers to actually step in and be more competitive against their own set and create that environment for the workforce to be able to live in.
Okay. Jeff, go ahead.
I just have a comment that I thought about. Excuse me. Park City is a resort town. People come here to recreate, to spend time. And what do they do mostly when they're in Park City and Deer Valley? Skiing, winter sports. Are those corporations that own these resorts, are they contributing back to the city? Are they reinvesting into the city? Because without those employees to run their resorts, they wouldn't be successful. You know, right now down at the state capitol, where I'm not going to say we, but they're going through a tax restructuring. And I'm just curious, just as a thought, is that something that could be done in Park City? Basically a resort tax that is reinvested back into Park City for the affordable homes so that they can have their employees up here year-round if they need them.
Okay, let's move on. So it's estimated that over 2,000 undocumented employees work for local businesses. Yes, many are Hispanic, but we're seeing pockets of immigrants from other countries from all over the world. The administration's policy is limiting legal immigration with a preference for the highly skilled workforce. What, if anything, can the local business community do to influence the immigration policy to provide for a service economy workforce?